Come on. Sunsets and the ghettos play. Long nights on a hot summer's block where you sip your brew and never touch your glass. This is for eyes that cry like yours and learn to smile again. Rise above the pain. This is for you and your crew. The ones that's true will always love you. No matter what you do.
Rise is the light, the light, the light,
the light, the light.
It's the light, the light, the light. It's the light, the light, the light.
Your light, your light.
It's the light, your light, my light.
This is for soldiers who bust their guns.
Come together to say no to the silence of our voices.
But you know and I know it's all about survival. The struggle of our people is like that unrivaled. Fuck politicians, they was never in control. It's deeper than that, a true battle for the soul. What they want is to bring us to our knees. So my people guard your life by any means.
This is for those who know we all gon' die. We're set up that way by infinite power. Those who know the feel of chains in the belly of the beast and the mental strength. This is for those who have their own fallen angels, trying to find their way home. This is for everybody,
everybody.
And anybody.
Of Spitfire, Women of Color Radio, every last Wednesday of the month on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Nicole representing from the CKUT on air basement, or should we say basement? Start off the show tonight. We have Malekin and Victoria in the studio, and we are listening to part of side, I'm assuming A, or one of the sides, off of the latest. I'm not going to say album, because in reality it's actually a cassette of the group Institutional Prostitution. There's been a musical reinvention of the use of technology in the Montreal scene, and tonight Spitfire listeners get the inside word. I will be talking to the founder and team captain of the local duo of Institutional Prostitution on the airwaves tonight, so stay tuned.
We're also pleased to welcome back our beloved Malek, who will be sharing with us one of her poems later on. Also, Lindsay Chung and May J. Nam, two correspondents of Spitfire Radio in Toronto, will also be discussing Chimamanda Adichie's novel, Half of a Yellow Sun. That's for later on.
Finally, we will end the show with a special editorial by Alyssa Clutterbuck, who will be talking about the Quebec election and what separatism means for women of color in Quebec and Canada. All this coming up on the next Spitfire Radio, Women of Color Radio.
Thank you.
magic bankers, pesos, I'm sorry, I'm gonna puke, these tapas in your bedroom, luxury, bamboo, white and brown,
living room, with the matching towels, top
Welcome to CKT 90.3 FM. I am on the line with Sadaf. Are you there? Sadaf, you with us? I can... How about now? Just one second, we're gonna listen to some more of Institutional Prostitution until we get this little technical glitch figured out.
Loft style, hostel, in his pipe, the old dreams of your ugly face stretched out.
Hello.
Ah, hello.
So it's working. Great.
Here we are.
Hi.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what that tape was that we were just playing?
The tape came out it's been a few months. In the winter it came out. And it was recorded at La Brick and put out by Los Discos en Fontaine. And it's called Baroque Rococo. And the newest album is actually called Cushy Shishi, and that just dropped on the 24th at Phenopolis. So that's available, 100 copies.
Congratulations on the LP
Thank
release.
Thank you.
Now, you studied fine arts at Concordia.
Yeah,
and that can really come out. If that's really evident in the album art for Cushy Shishi. Can you tell us a bit about like the inspiration for the cover title? For those that haven't seen it, it's essentially Sadaf and her bandmate Melissa laid out on like a duvet, and you guys are covered in paint and what looks like silk, sheer silks.
I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you, but I think you were asking about the album cover.
Yeah.
We do all of the visuals ourselves. We do everything ourselves, and it was really it was a collaborative effort to do that photo shoot. It's actually a photograph, and it's two photographs put together of the both of us. And we shot it ourselves, we shot each other, and then melted it together, kind of.
Okay.
And it's just, yeah, like luxury fabrics, what we thought fit for the title. Mm-hmm.
And you guys are more than just, like, DJ music. You guys are, I see on your website, is everything from music production company, DJ company, flow company, theatrical theater company, trailer company, car burial company, contemporary dance company, publishing company, new fashion company, catering company. Is there anything we left out that you guys don't do?
Or do?
No, we do everything. It's true. And I'm sure that we're going to be adding new stuff to that list very, very soon. The next project is more film-based, actually, and we'll be making the soundtrack for the introduction to a full-length film, which we would be each making, starring one another. And so that's in the future. And yeah, the catering company is going to take off really soon, too, I bet.
Now, are you guys, and I know that you mentioned you're moving down to Brooklyn, are you guys moving together?
No, I'm just going to spend some time traveling, and I don't know how long I'm going to stay. And Mesa left for a few months for Texas, and we worked from afar, and then I'm sure that she's going to come down and play shows with me there.
Okay.
But, yeah, it works long distance and short distance, if it makes sense. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started DJing and making your music, specifically with like so much technological equipment? Because a lot of your sound is heavily distorted or like really not like synthesized, but like how do mm-hmm. how did you like slowly work your way into this? Because when I saw your show at the Casa last week, I mm-hmm. was just like getting dizzy looking at all the wires.
Yeah, there's a lot of messy wires going on. It's true. I don't know. I mean, my background's really in visual art, and so I was just kind of like, you just learn as you go along, and I've been using like very cheap kind of keyboards, and then like just looping and just maybe constructing things in a different way than you're supposed to, and that's mm-hmm. probably why it sounds the way it does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of, yeah, like learning as you go and just like trying stuff and, yeah, connecting wires, and sometimes it doesn't do anything and sometimes it does.
And do you have any artists in Montreal where you like drew a lot of inspiration from? Like, in terms of, because, like, you guys have been on the Montreal scene for a few years now, and obviously, like, electronic music has been a little bit more in the underground, and now it's kind of coming back up into the above ground
scene. I mean, my personal influences are more, like, world music, and, but, yeah, for sure there's people that, like, we are inspired from, or, like, who inspire us because of what they do,
mm-hmm.
And their kind of approach to making music. And like, for example, like Dreamcatcher and Blake Hargreaves, who produced the record.
Uh-huh.
I would say is like, I don't know, a great person to name for that. And yeah. I mean, it's so broad. I couldn't even say.
Fair enough. I mean, that's another thing about your music is that, like, I feel like whenever I turn on one of the songs or a tape or something off that you have on online, every song is so different, and the construction of it and the build up is very, very strange at times. And like you seem to like to work outside of like a melody at times as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
So what draws you to that?
I think it's just because we can't really do it any other way. It's just naturally, like, when we come together, that's what it sounds like. And that's kind of been proven since we're improvising a lot, and it's always kind of different. But there's something that always sounds the same about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just because of, like, my background and Mesa's background and, like, what we're able to do with our instruments and what we like doing or what sounds good to our ears, you know, which sometimes may sound strange when it comes all together, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not so much planned. It's really, like, instinctively that's what we've been making, and we haven't really questioned it at all. But I'm sure it's going to change in the future as well. We, like, make more stuff. Maybe not that much. I don't know.
Is there any song that you would, like, recommend to somebody who maybe doesn't have, like, a ton of exposure to this kind of music that could, like,
yes,
warm them up to it?
Yeah. I would suggest the stuff, everything from the new album.
Kushi.
The title track, there's a title track, Kushi Shishi.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another track called Sonia Bitch Ass Up, which was our single that was released. And I think both of those are, like, more in the direction that we're going, and also, like, for people who have never heard it before, probably, like, a good introduction,
mm-hmm,
to get.
And can you just buy the LP? Because I know that you said there was 100 that were pressed.
The LP right now is available.
Fluorescent Friends.
First of all, it's available for purchase on our website, which,
okay,
is institutionalprostitution.com. And then it's, we also have a Bandcamp if people would like to buy it digitally or don't have a record player. And for the records, for the limited edition records, it's Sonopolis, Cheap Thrills, Adam Hart, Trois Tours, Death of Vinyl, Oblique, Sound Central as well. And if anyone is interested in a very, very, very limited edition cover, special fetish, custom-made object, we are selling our limited 10 copies.
Okay.
So they can just write to us, and we make them a deal.
The plot thickens. So lots of twists and turns. These girls from Institutional Prostitution are definitely pushing the limits of sound, music, visual art, as well as self-started companies. So kudos to you, Sadaf. We wish you all the best, and I'm going to go home and buy your album. So
yeah,
at least you got one person convinced.
Thank you, Nicole.
You're welcome. And to take us away off this interview, we're going to play the second side of Los Discos en Fantasmas. Thanks so much, Sadaf.
Thanks, Nicole. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
J. Blige, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hi, my name is Debi, storyteller, dub poet, partly raised in Montreal, 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 launching my new CD 333. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
On December 18th of 2011, the last U.S. troops withdrew from Iraq, and with them took the media attention that was once so focused on the nation. In the past 6 months, however, thousands of Iraqi civilians have continued to be targeted and killed in violent attacks that many fear may lead to civil war. This poem of remembrance is for them. I'm on a mission to debunk renditions of corrupt politicians, account for how Arabs were once mathematicians, but now wishing they were fishing with the Defending Marriage Coalition. Examine why I can envision religion without division, and why I know profits not to be measured in banks or seek pleasure through tanks, but as peoples whose ranks are devised by preventing our demise, not through perpetuating lies about where the soul flies, but about how the mind dies and replies to what continues to demystify our lives. Never mistake motion for action or get satisfaction from the retraction of political action, because that's just a fraction of the way those same factions reversed financial subtraction off the enslavement of the mind. And now what? You want to put this in rewind? After I'm done in 2 minutes, you won't be able to find me in your memories of trees and Bentleys, of shorties and 40s. Imagine stories and glories of how we've overcome slavery, and there's somehow a bravery in craving what's now just as enslaving. The creating of what constitutes debating fills your fading, just like waiting in line to sit and dine. While some might have problems with the eating of swine and drinking wine, I find something much more divine in examining what lies behind the line and what's happening in Palestine, because every stone thrown there holds the name of a friend of mine. Just like how a man who is Argentine drove millions to hate their lives, and to this day he drives what our future must use to thrive and survive, but instead of... But he sold on shirts for $5. There's blood on the collars, and scholars forget that their fathers and their daughters are forced to shake their hips after men on ships came equipped with what's hip and what's nice, and forced the fact that what lies between their eyes doesn't matter as much as what lies between their thighs. My brother dies in front of my eyes, and I realize that this is the prize to those who profess they are wise and disguise their love for demise as their love for free lives. But my life is free to make beats, and my lyrical feats could defeat the greatest of armies and serve as a warning and an alarming reminder that notes off a binder can cause the bending of the mind, but it isn't always the mind that's bending, or maybe it's ending as a product of the receiving and sending of ways to improve the lending of institutions that are selling the revolution and offering solutions and absolutions for the pollution and constitution of crimes against humanity, like selling Pepsi as the cure to sanity and the vanity and pride for those who would do anything to feel good inside, even if they had to hide behind buttons that direct lasers that guide missiles that eventually did collide into the side of the day my son died. Things are getting hotter, but don't take off your sweater. I'm just getting better, like the Euphrates and the letter. My rhyming is heartbreaking, the lining of the timing, subliming between writing and freestyling. I've killed MCs, and people were dialing the police and telling them that now I can damage streets with no beats, and that is the treats of known spins and others who can't stop to win against the demon within just by putting their thoughts to finish what others choose to diminish. I've never been so replenished, and now I relish every minute, even when I'm not really in it. This piece is my first and worst, and my best can only come if I choose not to rest and continue to test what continues to contest the way I manifest my existence. Are you listening to the way that the mic is glistening? Time has no contradiction, just manufactured convictions. Who knew that the way I greet you can defeat you, and you want to harm me twice already? Bush attacked him with a warning, and yet none of us were swarming. No, none of us left despite the theft of our existence. You took soccer on the streets and turned it into Christmas at the mall. Man, you got balls, making kids dream of buildings that are tall, never telling them how hard they'll fall if they don't stand quietly against the wall. Who knew that the sky can turn pink and the sun can sink into the earth, where things of the greatest worth give birth to every verse that I disperse and find myself in it immersed? Who knew that the soul I left in Baghdad I would search for in zigzags of body bags, and let it be a gift to my people? Their souls are so feeble, with every evil achiever there is born a believer who through words can conceive of Viva Iraq. And now that the birds are back, I think I saw a dove with the whole pain of the world on its back. Who knew that by placing verbs into sentences, we can disturb the sentences we are forced to serve? I try to flatten the curve and swerve, because I don't deserve to live off what they didn't choose to give from this earth, but I'll hold my pen steady, fire when ready, and let my words give birth.
Thank you very much. That was Malek tearing it up on the airwaves with her poem. What's the title of that?
Viva Iraq.
Viva Iraq. That was incredible. Up next, we have a piece by May and Lindsay, correspondents in Toronto. And the time is now 6:29. I hope you enjoy the second half of our show.
We will not bow down to exploitation. What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
I just can't tolerate
racism.
I just can't tolerate
injustice.
Just won't tolerate
exploitation.
What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
Hello, and welcome to Spitfire Women of Color Radio. I'm Lindsay Chong. Today we have May J. Nam here to discuss Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's seminal novel, Half of the Yellow Sun. Thanks for joining us today, May.
Thank you for having me.
First off, could you tell us a little bit about Chimamanda Adichie?
Yes. Ms. Adichie is a Nigerian writer who has received great acclaim for her novels Purple Hibiscus, which won the Commonwealth Writers Prize for the Best First Book in 2005, and Half of a Yellow Sun, which won the Orange Prize for Literature in 2007. And her most recent book is entitled That Thing Around Your Neck. Ms. Adichie grew up in a middle-class background in the university town of Lusaka, where her father was a professor at the University of Nigeria, and her mother worked as an administrator. She studied communications, political science, and creative writing in the United States, and she also holds a master's in African studies from Yale University. And it's really this background of being Nigerian, a middle-class woman, and African that Ms. Adichie draws inspiration for Half of a Yellow Sun.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that a lot of what Ms. Adichie strives to do in the novel is to really break from what she calls the danger of the single story. And the single story is how people are depicted as one thing, and as only one thing, over and over again, to the point that what is being depicted is what people become. In Ms. Adichie's view, the person or the voice that creates and tells the single story, this all hinges on power relations. And it's for that reason that Africa is often depicted as a unified place where there are, beautiful animals and nature, but the people are primitive and continuously at war and suffering from poverty and so on. And she actually has this really great anecdote about being confronted by this single story of Africa when she first met her roommate in the United States.
All right, let's hear it. This comes from Chimamanda Adichie's TED Talk entitled The Danger of the Single Story.
My American roommate was shocked by me. She asked where I had learned to speak English so well and was confused when I said that Nigeria happened to have English as its official language. She asked if she could listen to what she called my tribal music. and was consequently very disappointed when I produced my tape of Mariah Carey. She assumed that I did not know how to use a stove. What struck me was this. She had felt sorry for me even before she saw me. Her default position toward me, as an African, was a kind of patronizing, well-meaning pity. My roommate had a single story of Africa, a single story of catastrophe. In this single story, there was no possibility of Africans being similar to her in any way, no possibility of feelings more complex than pity, no possibility of a connection as human equals. So after I had spent some years in the US as an African, I began to understand my roommate's response to me. If I had not grown up in Nigeria, and if all I knew about Africa were from popular images, I too would think that Africa was a place of beautiful landscapes, beautiful animals, and incomprehensible people fighting senseless wars, dying of poverty and AIDS, unable to speak for themselves, and waiting to be saved by a kind white foreigner. And so I began to realize that my American roommate must have, throughout her life, seen and heard different versions of this single story. As had a professor who once told me that my novel was not authentically African. Now, I was quite willing to contend that there were a number of things wrong with the novel, that it had failed in a number of places, but I had not quite imagined that it had failed at achieving something called African authenticity. In fact, I did not know what African authenticity was. The professor told me that my characters were too much like him, an educated and middle-class man. My characters drove cars. They were not starving. Therefore, they were not authentically African.
That was Miss Adichie discussing what she calls the danger of the single story. This idea of the single story defining groups of people is something that we can relate to very well as women of color.
Exactly. To the point that others may call you out for not conforming to the single story or stereotype of what an authentic or a real Korean or Latino or brown person is supposed to be like.
Definitely. And these stereotypes become so entrenched that to break from that makes you sort of a more removed outsider. So that you're not only othered in the sense that you are racialized, but you are also seen as being whitewashed if you like certain kinds of things or don't speak a Western language or speak a Western language too well.
Exactly. And so what Ms. Adichie is trying to do with Half of a Yellow Sun is to tell multiple stories at once and to expose these complexities. And so although the novel is explicitly about the very violent and tragic Biafran War in Nigeria during the 60s, it's also very much about British colonialism, political idealism, family relationships, love, and ultimately who gets to speak and who should be telling the story.
So what happens in the novel?
Well, the novel begins just prior to the Nigerian Declaration of Independence from Britain in 1960, and it's told through the perspective of four main characters. So there's Alana, who's an idealistic, very wealthy woman. Her sister, her twin sister, Kanin, who's a shrewd and cynical businesswoman. Ugwa, a clever houseboy from a small village. And Richard, who's an Englishman in love with Kanin and trying to write a great book on Nigeria. And the novel follows the relationships between the characters through the massacres of Igbo people by the Hausa in 1966 to the declaration of the independent Igbo Republic of Biafra in 1967, and then finally the Biafran War from 1967 to 1970. And it's really through using these different voices and perspectives that we get a sense of the complexity of what's happening, and not only on, you know, the national scale, but the humanity of each of these individuals as people, and not only as, you know, victims of yet another African tribal conflict.
That sounds great. Do you have a passage you would like to share with us?
Yes, I do. So this passage takes place right after the horrific massacres of Igbo people in various towns and villages across Nigeria, and it details Olana's reaction to the declaration of the independent Igbo Republic known as Biafra. The rally was held in Freedom Square in the center of the campus, lecturers and students shouting and singing, an endless sheet of heads and placards held high. We shall not, we shall never move. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved. Ojukwa is behind us, we shall never move. God is behind us, we shall never move. They swayed as they sang, and Alola imagined that the mango and the melina trees swayed too in agreement in one fluid arc. The sun felt like a flame brought too close, and yet it was drizzling, and the lukewarm raindrops mixed with her sweat. Her arm brushed Odignipo's as she raised her placard. It read, "We cannot die like dogs." Baby was sitting on Odignipo's shoulders, waving her stuffed doll, and the sun was bright through the thin drizzle, and Olana was filled with a delicious exuberance. Ugwa was beside her. His placard read, "God bless Biafra." They were Biafrans. She was Biafran. Somebody shouted, "Odignipo," and it spread across the students. "Odignipo, address us." Odignipo climbed up to the podium, waving his Biafran flag. Swaths of red, black, and green, and at the center, a luminous half of a yellow sun.
That was Meijie Nam reading from Miss Adichie's Half of a Yellow Sun. Thank you for sharing this book with us today.
Thank you for having me.
If you would like to listen to the full TED Talk featuring Chimamanda Adichie, you can access it at www.ted.com. Half of a Yellow Sun is also in the process of being adapted into a film and will be released in 2013. You are listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on 90.3 FM CKUT.
Thank you to May and Lindsay. It's just after 6:44 p.m. Wednesday. This is Spitfire Radio coming to you only on CKUT 90.3 FM every last Wednesday of the month. My name is Alyssa. Right now, of course, we're going to turn to the Quebec elections. Who following that? This piece has no specific title, but I'm hoping rather nationalist rhetoric coming from the one and only Parti Québécois. This is for you because our issues are often not covered. The message has to be clear. In Quebec, we live in French, we work in French, we communicate in French. Such is the ongoing message of the current frontrunner Pauline Marois in our upcoming provincial election less than 1 week away. Marois has also released a proposal for a type of secularism charter which would forbid public servants from wearing or carrying turbans, kippahs, and hijabs, while at the same time allowing symbols such as the crucifix, because this is the type of symbol that displays Quebec's historical and cultural past. She has also promised within her first 100 days to expand Bill 101 to SAGEPs, which currently only applies up to high schools, and other areas not already covered by the all-encompassing law that made French the official language of Quebec. These recent announcements by the PQ leader are consistent with her priorities since becoming the party's leader in 2007. One of her first asks was to introduce a, quote, identity act that would ban non-French speakers, including Canadian citizens, from holding public office or even from petitioning the Quebec legislature. Now, there is a long history of what I would call fear of a non-French planet sentiment here in Quebec, which stretches even before the aftermath of the 1995 referendum, which you'll all remember issued the famous quote by the one and only Jacques Parizeau that it was in part the ethnic vote that defeated Quebec independence. But increasingly, I see remarkable similarities between the rhetoric of the PQ and other sovereigntists, and the anti-immigrant, anti-Obama rhetoric emanating from the Republican Party in the United States. Now let's pause. This might sound bizarre to those who think of Quebec as this wonderful progressive place where the possibility of free education is actually on the table. But consider a few things. Just this past Friday, Governor Mitt Romney, the Republican Party's nominee for president, was in his home state of Michigan and made a reference that he later described as a joke, with his wife standing right beside him to a crowd of his supporters. Quote, "No one has ever asked to see my birth certificate. They know that this is the place that we were born." The crowd applauded unanimously, I should add. Also, last week, during the same week, the PQ leader said that Anglophones, Allophones, and Aboriginal people would be forbidden from seeking municipal or provincial office under this policy that she was proposing, unless they have an appropriate knowledge of French. But she failed to clarify how this would come about. She was later forced to backpedal after extreme outrage, particularly from Aboriginal leaders, ensued. But she maintained the core of the most controversial aspects of this proposal, the evaluation of one's citizenship. Let us remember that she is not stipulating who will be tested and who are the testers, but given the lack of diversity within public servants in the government of Quebec currently, including among the magistrates, it appears that mostly white francophone civil servants will be evaluating who is deserving of, quote, Quebec citizenship, because let us remember that Quebec is not a country contrary to its identity as such. So here in Quebec, French appears to be a proxy for, quote, white French nationalism, as I'm calling it, while in the U.S., birtherism is a proxy for anti-black hatred of the first African-American president. Because let's remember, it's not okay to just say I don't like Obama because he's black. Questioning the citizenship of people of color in North America has a long history and continues, unfortunately, into the 21st century. As the road of the joke Mitt Romney was making is that a white American for a white American today, his or her citizenship and birth certificate are, of course, not questions at all, because a typical American and a truly deserving American is a white American. And you'll notice that no one's ever claiming we should build a fence between the U.S.-Canadian border. Obama's legitimacy, on the other hand, must be questioned, and even though he won by more than 8 million votes. And we must be skeptical, even cynical, about his citizenship, because there's just something about him that is foreign. It just has to be foreign. Here in Quebec, the insistence on a proficiency test in French, a language that already enjoys the status as the official and first language of Quebec, is arguably a way of intimidating people who are not only French-speaking or for whom French is not their first language, as a way to question the citizenship of anyone who is not only French-speaking or French-speaking first. Let us not forget the rather ugly history of restricting civic participation in North America. Until the Voting Rights Act signed in the United States in 1965, government policies applied what seemed to be race-neutral restrictions to voting, such as literacy tests, poll taxes, and intimidation tactics, such as telling an African-American to name exactly how many jelly beans were in a jar right in front of them on the spot. Now, on their face, there's nothing explicitly racist about these tactics as applying to someone to who's trying to vote, but they were only applied to African Americans and other people who are identified as, quote, coloreds in the South as a way of restricting their right to the ballot box. And I'm not excluding Canada from these tactics. In fact, our first Prime Minister, John A. Macdonald, was pretty insistent about only white males with property voting. He said as such. The problem is that many of these policies on their face, as I said, are race neutral, but of course have a racially and ethnically disparate impact to the detriment of, guess who, people of color. This is the genius of legislation such as the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which the freedom rights movement worked tirelessly to pass. The Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act recognize that historically, into and apparently, unfortunately, into the present, things that seem colorblind on their face are not applied equally to everyone. So while it's not explicitly racist or xenophobic to espouse criteria under which Quebec will decide who is and is not a citizen and able to run for office, efforts and policies of the PQ rely on this key assumption that it's acceptable to limit civic participation in a democratic process and question the legitimacy of, quote, the other's citizenship. In this case, the citizenship of people who are Canadian citizens as well. Oddly enough, the mentality adopted by the policies of the PQ and other sovereigntists creates this strange relationship in Canada where extremely radically right opponents of bilingualism and separatism who want to kick out French as one of the official languages kind of ally with people of color who are born in Canada and non-white people who are immigrants to Canada who, for whatever their personal political ideology, are of course alienated by this type of rhetoric that basically rejects their full recognition of citizenship if they are not white and French simultaneously in this process, in this province. As the Ottawa Citizen pointed out earlier this month, placing French and by proxy sovereignty at the centerpiece of a campaign in Quebec is misplaced given this time of global financial crisis where people are anxious about their economic security, where there are massive questions about corruption of the government, the question of education and how it's going to be funded, healthcare and infrastructure. Even still, if the question of sovereignty and the role of French in Quebec life is going to be on the table, let's talk about the benefits of Quebec independence. Will an independent Quebec state benefit the lives of everyone living here? And will embrace the diversity that Canada, for what all notion of diversity exists in Canada, relies on and prides itself on? And we as people of color who come from places that have been colonized by European powers, including the French, we have the right to ask, what will our status be in a Quebec state? Will we be equal under the law, and will similar protections of formal equality afforded to us in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms apply in the Constitution of Quebec? I want to be clear and honest. This is not about French. I'm learning French, I speak French, and I have not seen one major Quebec politician who is not fluent in French on television or on the radio. Quebec has its own legal system, its own immigration policy, its own interpretation of Canada's official languages policy that promotes the supremacy of French. All of this is designed to protect the language and cultural history of French in this society. In my opinion, this is about using French as a means to go old school racist against the changes and shifting demographics of this province and this country. Mm-hmm. It lets French nativism also off the hook for their theft of Indigenous people's lands, their own participation in the transatlantic slave trade. Yes, it did exist here. And their willingness to hold on to some antiquated views about any difference in society, while at the same time positioning themselves as a, quote, progressive place. This is about longing for a past era, an era of which people of color knew our place, and it was a place that was never equal. And with that, I am done with my rant about the elections. I hope everyone votes and participates in the democratic process, but, you know, sometimes you just gotta tell it like it is.
Woo!
Let me be kind. Make me unselfish without being blind. Though I may suffer, I'll envy it not and endure what comes. 'Cause he's all that I gotta tell him. Tell him I need him. Tell him I love him. Love.
you for listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, saying no to the silencing of our voices every last Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Turn it up.
Are we on the air?
Uh-huh.
You didn't hear?
All over the world, man. Gotta make that money, man. Make your money, y'all. Just do what you got to do.
So, a big shout-out to everyone who made it to the studio today. Malek, Alyssa, Nicole, our guest Sadaf from Institutional Prostitution. Also, Mae Nam and Lindsay Chung repping from the 416, and Preeti Dhaliwal and Lily Dow showing their amazing support throughout this really difficult month of August to bring on the latest and greatest Spitfire show. I also wanted to big up my girlfriend Katie in San Francisco and hope that she can join us on air again in the fall. Spitfire Women of Color Radio broadcasts every last Wednesday of the month. You can write to us at spitfire@ckut.ca and check us out at spitfire.blogspot.com.
Peace!
Either way, I show love. Let it make me or break me. I'm the queen of self-esteem. Don't sweat the cream. Set the scene. Get the cream like how you mean. Straight up, one of the best things being. Ain't no puppet on a string. Like them hoes sucking on your thing. Overworked and underpaid for days. Behave, I'm not gonna be your slave.
Do it and do it and do it.
People screaming hardcore, living in the ghetto, sleeping on the floor. What you thought I was gonna rise? Do my thing, get my piece of the pie. You're holding your breath for great God out the sky. Best live your life, cause you just waiting to die. People still taking life for a joke. Can't see the fire, but you blow out of smoke. If you didn't get it, you got what you deserve. And just like that, that's my word. Every day I wake up, scheming on the come up. No daydreaming, got to stay one up. How you gonna sit back and wait on the wealth? Gotta go get it, motivate yourself. If not, you only perpetrate yourself. And at the end of the day, you only hate yourself. If you know my motto, take in charge. You got what it takes to make it all.